This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. Each week, I'll be joined by a guest. We'll impart our own sex wisdom, ask our own sex questions, and we'll go over all the things they don't teach you in school. To bring this all together, though, we'll need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
In this episode, we speak to intimacy coordinator Eitor O'Brien about her role and what it entails.
The intimate content is choreographed, so we bring a clear physical structure to the intimate content. I would say it is a body dance, just like a tango is a dance, so is a moment of simulated sexual content.
And we speak to her about the reception her work has received from the press.
Some articles are out going, you're the sex guru, and I'm going, I'm not a sex guru. In fact, that's the last thing that I am.
Hello and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite, and as ever, I'm joined by accredited sex and relationship therapist, Kate Campbell. Hello, Mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Every week, Mum and I give sex and relationships a good going over with a guest, and today we're joined by the intimacy coordinator for some of our favourite TV shows like Normal People, I May Destroy You, and of course, Sex Education, Eitor O'Brien. We have a great chat with Eitor coming up, don't we, Mum?
We have a brilliant, brilliant, stunning conversation coming up.
We just went for a walk, and the whole way around the walk, we just gushed to each other about how much we thought she was amazing.
Just like, that was great, wasn't it? It was so great. That wasn't it great?
I know. It was so, so good. So that's all coming up. Talking about consent, talking about what being an intimacy coordinator is. I think there'll be people who listen to this who don't know what it is, but she'll explain that, so don't worry. But before we get to that cracking interview, Mum, you were telling me that you found an article or a survey. What was it that you came across?
What I did come across was a survey by Ashley Madison, which is the married online dating agency, which has found that more people are having affairs or seeing other people or using their agency during lockdown. So Ashley Madison is for people who are married.
This is their website. It says affairs and discreet married dating. Literally the first word you see on Google is affairs. But I'm sorry, I cut you off. So they did a survey, and what did it say?
More people are using it at the rate of about 17,000 a day during lockdown. So they've done some research to try and work out why. And the research they've come up with is that I think amongst their members or their subscribers or whatever you want to call them, that they are complaining about lack of sexual initiation in their relationships. A lot of them are saying that they've tried to initiate sex during lockdown or at other times and their partners haven't responded. And so they've gone and joined up with the agency, because what's a bit sad is that some of them seem to be attracted to their partners and are at home with them. But because nothing's happening, instead of talking about it, they're going off somewhere else. But it says that most of them say if they didn't have these extra relationships, they wouldn't still be married.
Interesting.
They say that this is now calling into question the Western idea of your one life partner as your best friend and confidant. They're saying this is not true. You know, people are doing anything but treating their partner that way, which I think is just fascinating.
So people are staying with their husband or wife. And part of that is due to the fact that they're like, well, let's say the intimacy that we may have lost or is lacking, because I'm getting it elsewhere, it means that that's not as big a deal and the marriage can stay together. Whereas if I stayed faithful to them and didn't get that intimacy elsewhere, the marriage would probably fall apart.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's what they're saying. And I think part of the reason for that is that people feel continuously rejected if they keep attempting intimacy and they don't get it. Whereas if they don't attempt it and they feel it's satisfied and that they're getting the strokes they need elsewhere, emotional strokes, I mean, and the sex, obviously, then they're not feeling bad. Mm. The relationship isn't making them feel bad and they can enjoy the good bits of it.
Interesting.
We've recently been much more keen in the West on fidelity, one single partner monogamy. And in lots of parts of the world, affairs are expected, and in history, affairs were expected. So maybe this is an interesting experiment, which Ashley Madison say isn't necessarily working that well.
In what way? Oh, the experiment as in the monogamy experiment isn't working
well.
Yeah. I mean, that is a bit rich coming from Ashley Madison, who are not helping the monogamy experiment at all. It's a contentious topic, though, so please do send us your thoughts on that to our email or any questions you have for Kate to podcasts@hattrick.com or on the Twitter using the hashtag RealSexEDU. But, Mum, so enough chat from us. It's that time for our interview with intimacy coordinator Ita O'Brien, in which I began by asking her what her sex education was like.
Well, I come from a very colourful Irish Catholic background and with parents that absolutely made sure we had a Catholic upbringing. So I went to a convent school for my education, which of course meant you couldn't even wear patent shoes in case, you know, it reflected your underwear.
Brilliant.
And my sex education, the whole sum of it was in the biology lesson at the point where you learned about the anatomy of the male and the female genitalia. And my biology teacher at the time, I can see it so vividly, was 7-8 months pregnant. With her back against the wall, her hands sort of behind her back, looking down at her feet or what she could over her burgeoning belly, saying, well, of course, all of this can't happen unless it's within the bounds of matrimony. And that was about it.
Wow. So
yeah, bless her cottons.
Yeah. So what effect did that have on a little eater? I mean, that teacher and that experience?
So I was then one of those sort of children regarding the Catholic faith where I was thinking this is completely mad, and you know, had a conversation once, you know, where with my mother about the possibilities of sex before marriage, and the response was, if any of you have sex before marriage, I'll disown you. So you know, that was, and that was just commonplace, that was just the normal. But my rebellious streak in me was very much, well, that's not how the world is, and that's not what I hear from my friends. So then it's a case of journeying and finding out as you go along.
And your rebellious streak has taken you quite far, I would say, because now, of course, you are an intimacy coordinator. For some of the people at home, maybe, can you describe what that role is and how that came about and what it entails?
So in a nutshell, an intimacy coordinator is a practitioner who, just like a stunt coordinator, will bring a process to creating a really good fight, will bring support throughout a whole production, be it in theatre or TV and film, to creating the intimate content. So we make sure there is open communication from the get-go and across the board and right throughout, and then putting in place a process that allows for agreement and consent. And that's of touch, of simulated sexual content, and of nudity. And then a clear process where the intimate content is choreographed. So we bring a clear physical structure to the intimate content. I would say it is a body dance, just like a tango is a dance, just like a swordplay is a dance. So is a moment of simulated sexual content. And as intimacy coordinators, we bring the skills of body knowledge, body rhythms, body dance through and choreograph clearly so that everything is known, the director's vision is served, the writing is served, and it means the actors know exactly what's going to happen and they can bring all of their skills as an actor to the intimate content.
I was talking to someone the other day and I told them you were going to be on the podcast because I was obviously very excited, and they asked me, how do you become an intimacy coordinator? So, yeah, how did you?
what my journey actually was I was creating my own work. I was looking at a devised piece of work on the flip side of the perpetrator and the victim. And in that place, I was looking at how do I keep my actor safe? What rehearsal processes do I need to put in place to make sure that I create a robust rehearsal so that I can get my actors to explore this dynamic in a really healthy, conscious, robust way? And one of my colleagues, who was the head of movement at Mount View, Meredith Dufton, said, please come and teach what you're developing. So the first time I actually taught then, what I had been bringing together was in April 2015. And then over the years, getting feedback from the students, feedback from Meredith, I co-worked with another movement director and teacher, Vanessa Ewan. And then the students started to say, well, this is great, but what about when we're out in the profession? So the first place I presented the work was at the Personal Managers Association, which is a group of agents. So that was June 2017. So for that, I then had to codify, sort of bring a narrative through. So that was the first time I brought together what I was developing. And then ended up writing out, sort of becomes the intimacy onset guidelines. And yes, it talks through right from producers. We're asking a producer to do what the flip is for a producer, right the way through director, agents, the audition process, casting directors, agents, right the way through to rehearsals in theatre and TV and film, right the way through to performing the scene. So those guidelines are there. They're the intimacy onset guidelines, and they're on my website, and absolutely they're there for everybody to read, to print out, to take with them. I always say to my actors at an audition, don't just speak about the guidelines, have them printed out and hand them over in the days when we could be in person. So you have the really clear structure to refer to and to work with.
Of course.
And of course, Kate, you will know in your work, when there's open communication, when there is a clear structure put in place, an agreement and consent fundamentally that's invited. I always say the statements in the past had been, oh, you're an actor, you should be able to be naked, you should be able to do any degree of intimate content. And of course, you know, we all have different journeys in our lives, we all have different relationships with our body, we all have different experiences, you know, how we've been in our intimate expression, which means we've got different relationships with our touch, with where we're happy to be touched, with where we're happy or how we're happy to be naked. Naked, or what we're happy to express simulated sexual content wise. And just because someone has a boundary in any one of those places does not mean that they're not a good actor, and in fact the best actor for that job. And of course those clear boundaries allow the actor to create better content and serves the director, serves the writer.
And this should mirror real life, of course, as well, shouldn't it? Because couples should be talking about consent. And in fact, you have done me and other sex therapists an enormous favour, because since you've been around, and I can't believe it's so short a time really, my clients, my couples, are often talk about you. Yes, when we introduce the whole idea of consent, which of course comes in pretty early, people now know what it is, know what we're talking about. And exactly what you're saying is what I'm always saying. Once the boundaries are there, then you can be free to be creative. But if you're constantly on your guard, how can you relax and make a great show or whatever it is?
Absolutely. When you haven't had an opportunity to say what's okay for you, you're holding that in you. That causes tensions in the body.
Absolutely.
Equally, so many people, they're going, I'm okay. I want to make sure that the person that I'm working with is okay. I want to know their boundaries so that then I can, you know that they're taken care of. And of course, that can be the same in real life couples. You know, you want to make sure that not only to be able to express what's okay for you and to know that your partner is okay, and then you can get on and really be free and open.
Because apart from anything else, something I've often thought of is that you don't know the background of the people who are doing the work, and you don't know how triggering it's all going to be.
That's right. We don't know, and we don't need to know in the workplace. But that's where we do need to make a structure that allows for that agreement and consent. And again, no questions need to be asked. So particularly when we're agreeing touch. And it's so interesting that, sometimes people know. So that actually, this part of my neck, don't touch that. So you go, great, that's your no-go area. Thank you for that gift of that clear boundary. Then we can work freely with everywhere that is in your yes. But sometimes you're checking things out. So we had a couple of actors, and one said, is it okay if I stroke your hair? And then the actor said, yes. So you always ask and then physically do it. You know, so then she goes to actually stroke the hair, and you can see a shiver. You can see the whole body having a body memory. The actress came to tears, and she was scuppered. She was, she wasn't aware that that was going to be a trigger point for her. And the other thing we put in place is a timeout. is that the actors have the autonomy to halt the action, be it in rehearsal or in performance. So she called a time out, needed to take a break. And then we came back and interestingly, you know, stroking face, that was all fine for her, but that was her trigger moment. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, that's what we're looking at putting in place so that, again, it stays professional. We don't have to bring in your personal stories into the workplace, but it does allow for that agreement and consent. And also that, you know, really being clear that consent is a process, not a moment. So someone might at the beginning of a day said, yes, very happy to kiss, but by the middle of the afternoon and you've kissed like 100 times by then and there's, you know, 6 o'clock stubble and your chin's getting red raw, you might say, okay, you know, I said yes to a kiss there, I think we've got it now, we can do that scene without the kiss here. So things like that as well to be really clear about.
Brilliant, isn't it? I was curious about things like shows like I May Destroy You, where the sex can be very violent, and that seems so challenging. How on earth do you cope with that?
So that's right, where there's challenging or abusive intimate content, it's even more important that that open communication is had, but that in particular, the clear choreography is really anchored, that we really, you know, sort of have such a clear physical shape so that the actors feel completely secure within that. Mm. And then if needed, I will co-work with a stunt coordinator so it goes into sort of violent actions that, of course, it's all simulated. The stunt coordinator is going to bring their skills to that, you know, the moment in I May Destroy You when you have from the consensual sex with the queer, gay, male loving to the abusive sexual content. And there's a moment where there's a hand and he puts his hand on the bed and the perpetrator puts his hand over that. So again, you're looking at those reverse techniques where the person who is so-called holding just holds a frame and it's the person who's being held that controls the energy. So it's those kind of things that we're putting in place, making sure the actor is absolutely physically comfortable, physically in agreement and consent of everything that's happened, the nudity that's required, the shape of the choreography. And then again, it means that they can really release into the emotional journey that's required for that scene. Mm.
That's brilliant, because that moment is so powerful, the moment you describe. And who would have thought there was so much behind it? It's incredible.
Absolutely. And the other thing I do is, as an intimacy coordinator, I have a certain amount of skills, but I certainly am not a therapist. I'm not a counsellor. But I can recognise if someone looks like in the various things that might be triggering or that you know that you need to take care. So I co-work with an artist wellbeing practitioner. A lady called Lou Platt is the lady that I've worked with for the last... since 2015. And when I see challenging subject matter within a production, then invariably I will have that conversation around how this production is going to take care if somebody could be triggered. And of course, we're taking care of the people who are performing those scenes. It can be anybody. You know, it could be your cameraman, it could be anybody within the crew. Mm. So that's what you need to take care of. Say, my skills go to here. And if I feel someone needs that extra help, that's part of what I'm putting in place, that I can robustly feel that there's an offer of support in the areas that are outside of my skill.
Wow. I mean, there's so much to unpack there, because one of the main things for me is when I heard about this, it made so much sense instantly. But then the question you ask yourself is, well, what was there before?
Mm.
Was there nothing? What happened before?
What happened before was a void, basically.
Yeah.
And in that void, people were embarrassed to talk about the intimate content. Mm. And without there being a professional structure within which to have those conversations, it just got left. Mm. You know, directors would be equally as nervous about engaging with an intimate scene as the actors would be. Mm. And it was just left. And in that situation, then invariably by the time you get to the performers, so one of two things would happen. That perhaps the director would speak openly and clearly to the actors. And then they'd either say, you two go away and work it out for yourselves. Or they'd say, okay, we've talked about it, jump in front of the camera, just do it.
Mm.
And that's in filming. But in theatre, again, you know, the amount of times that perhaps they've talked about what they're going to do, but without a clear choreography, without a clear professional process, without a clear structure, physical structure being agreed, all kinds of things happen. The amount of time you hear people on stage, they say, oh, I'd agreed that, you know, his hand would go here, and suddenly on stage it slipped and it was, you know, grabbing my buttocks, or they agreed a kiss and then suddenly a tongue goes into your mouth. All things that are shocking, that are unacceptable, happening on stage in front of an audience. So that's what would happen, and that's where you would have all these stories of actors in the past going, oh, they're really awkward things, you just have to get through them, and bad practice just because there was no professional structure to give good practice.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So I was doing some research into some of your work online, and there's some great videos on YouTube and stuff of you working on various projects. And what's interesting is there's so many people who've just seen Bridgerton and the sex scenes in that and have clearly just looked up how sex scenes are done online, because the comments of the videos of your work are just populated with people going, "I've just watched Bridgerton, blah, blah, blah." And some of the main comments are people saying that they thought the movements were so realistic that they thought that actors were actually, were actually having sex. And one comment said that they thought they're having sex, genuinely having sex, and the rest of the crew just looked away whilst they did it.
Yeah,
just
pointed
the camera at them and looked away.
So first of all, isn't it Bridgerton? It is so beautiful. You know, the whole production's beautiful. And then, yes, the intimate content is amazing. That wasn't part of my work.
No.
That is a lovely intimacy coordinator called Lizzie Talbot. Mm. And it's so lovely. Again, you know, it's such a positive production for intimacy coordination, where Lizzie says about how the production worked with her so openly, and in particular really gave a lot of time in the pre-production phase to rehearsal. And that's also what happened with our May Destroy You. So that scene that we discussed with the assault, we rehearsed that back in August of 2019, and it actually wasn't filmed until January, February of 2020.
Wow. Wow.
But the fact that we'd had that rehearsal, it meant those actors did. Can you imagine if you didn't have that rehearsal, you'd have an actor sort of going, it's coming up, how's it going to be? Whereas once you've rehearsed, and that's absolutely what happened in Bridgerton, once they rehearsed, it means that the actors are going away going, phew, okay, great, it's a body dance. You know, I've got a clear choreography that I can practice. Mm. And then it means that by the time you get to set to perform it, there's a sense of being embodied, there's a body memory. And again, all of that preparation means that the actors can release, be open, be autonomous and empowered, so that they can really bring their best of themselves to the performing of character and character's emotional storytelling.
That's brilliant. And in terms of the movement, though, and making it look so realistic to the point where people are having to look it up online just to double check that it isn't just people actually having sex in front of the camera and the crew looking away. How do you make that happen?
So first of all, modesty garments wise, whenever there is simulated sexual content, always will there be genitalia coverings. The actors are never ever completely naked. Again, and that keeps it professional, but it keeps the actors protected. And then we're looking at rhythms. Literally, we're looking at counts of eight, possibly, you know, I always use a language and a body system that's going to resound with those particular actors. So, for example, if someone's a really good musician, then I'll talk in terms of legato and, you know, crescendo and pizzicato. Mm. And I might talk in terms of laban, which has calibrated movement into flowing and ringing and pressing and punching. So, again, we're literally sort of looking at the detail of the quality of the movement, detail of the rhythm, sort of bringing in counts, and then looking at what body part to body part can be pressed into each other. So if you've got the camera at one side, then you can make sure that sort of you're pulling a hip bone and perhaps pushing the front of a thigh to the back of a thigh, so that that's the place that's really connected, and then that movement can journey through the body. So it gives the illusion of that beautiful physical connection right the way through to orgasm.
It's great. And
amazing.
And there was something as well in one of these videos where I think with that rhythm, you talked about the, in this particular case, the bonobo rhythm versus the horse rhythm. I guess has two functions. One, to get that rhythm idea, which I got it straight away what you meant, you know, which is, yeah. And also that thing of removing yourself from the acting moment, because you can maybe bring yourself, you can sort of be more like, okay, this is the animalistic side of things. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's great you've got that awareness. So, yeah, so, you know, our intimate loving is our most precious part of our innermost selves. You know, who and how we express ourselves with our loved ones is the pinnacle of our loving, the beauty of our lives. And, you know, I really believe that that is personal and private and should be kept personal and private. So we don't want to expose that in our professional world. We can draw from it, but we don't need to expose it. So then I look at another technique is to use animal rhythms in a drama training. Actors will sort of do animal studies where you study an animal and then try to inhabit it. And it gives, as you said, Dig, you get it instantly, don't you? You get a bonobo, you know, we're looking at close to ground, they're in width, you know, and then where the rhythm comes from, and also breath and sounding. So an animal, if you explore the animal rhythms mating and then try to inhabit it, it gives you a whole package, not just a rhythm and a physicality, but a breath and a sound. So a bonobo is such a different rhythm to the energy of a horse. So, for example, the bonobo is down low and it's down in the pelvis and there's that quick rhythm there, whereas a horse is sort of has such a long thrust, it journeys through the spine. It gives an absolutely completely different quality. And yeah, so we can talk in detail using reference to those animal rhythms so that we can then be excited and precise and professional and then create a really excellent scene without ever having to sort of feel that we've touched on exposing or sharing too much of ourselves.
And that's what's so incredible about it, because it isn't so personal to the actors themselves, and yet it feels so authentic and real and human. It reminds me of something that, Mum, you were saying that you heard of, right?
No, I was just going to say, I overheard some people talking on a radio programme or podcast or something, actually, I think it was, but they were talking about a sex scene where they'd said it was incredibly authentic, and they thought, and the other one said the reason that it was because the woman, the actress, had looked down as the man rolled off. She'd looked down under the covers, and they said she's looking for the size of the wet patch.
Yeah.
And I thought, yes. That level of detail is absolutely it. Yes. And it's subliminal. You're not necessarily aware of what's happening, but it makes you think this is real.
It just serves you, doesn't it? You know, I was on a rehearsals with the actors and with the director of photography, again, a really important part of the storytelling, because it's not just what the choreography of the intimate scene is, but what the camera is capturing. So then we created a beautiful shape and I said, OK, I want to be absolutely clear. When is the moment of penetration? And the camera person was saying, why is that important? And both actors went, no, we need to know. And of course, that's what's been so lovely in particular this year as the productions have come out, the reflection back of how important that detail is. Because my belief is that when things are anatomically really correct, we as an audience know that it's real, and then we can stay engaged in the storytelling and stay engaged in the characters. And as soon as anatomically it's not right, we just go, oh, well, I don't believe that anymore. And you, for me, certainly, I disengage. So that's my intention with that. That, again, just bring that reality that the period sex scene in I May Destroy You.
That's what I was just thinking of, yeah.
Yeah. First of all, just reading that, going, oh, my goodness, Michaela, you know, again, yes. This amazing, beautiful female writer who are telling our stories, telling the story from the female point of view. When have you seen the reality of the paraphernalia of our menstrual cycle, you know, shown? So I was delighted to serve that storytelling, but it was about the detail. So they're not just in anatomical detail of the choreography, but also really clearly the props departments, you know, creating the props.
That scene was incredible. I had cramps during that scene. It was so amazing. Yeah. Yes.
You know, our blood clots.
Incredible.
You know, the props department, again, bringing that detail of how they created it. We would discuss how much blood, what is realistic. So it wasn't going to be too much and turn people off, but really tell that storytelling. And what I love that Michaela's had written, that the response of the character of Biagio is his wonder and his joy and him lifting and feeling the texture and commenting. And so it's that sense of her bodily fluids being found delightful and beautiful and exciting. It was a joy to be able to support that scene being created.
Going forward, is there anything that you think on a sort of wider scale? I mean, obviously, this work, I think, has already taken off massively, and hopefully this will be standard practice from here on out. But is there anything more that you think needs to be done going forward?
Well, it is just that, Dig, as you say, standard practice.
Yeah.
You know, people still, or productions and producers still think, oh, you're just there for safety. Yeah, they're like, you know, sort of like the safeguarding person. You're just going to be there to check in with the actors, to help us create nudity waivers, and then that's it. And that's missing out a whole aspect of understanding of actually what it is that we bring as practitioners with skills. You know, you wouldn't dream of saying to a choreographer, you know, great, come in, talk to the actors, talk to them about how you're going to do a waltz, check out that they've got robust ankles and not likely to hurt themselves, and then stand back and let everybody get on with how they're going to try and create a tango. That's just mad. And yet that is still what is on some productions has been asked of us. So yes, so that's what we need. We need the whole industry to get behind it, and it just becomes legislation that that it's not just left up to the discretion of each individual production, and that's in TV, film and in theatre. You're having an initial read of a script, you see, oh, there's a dance, you know, say Bridgerton, seeing all those beautiful dances, great, we need to earmark that, we know we need a choreographer in for that. You know, there's fights, we know we need a stunt coordinator. There's an intimate scene, we know we need an intimacy coordinator, that it's flagged up and that it's earmarked and that then the budget is put aside for it.
I mean, I'm going to ask a potentially difficult question and a far-reaching question, but what do you think about your work can we apply to our own lives? Because there'll be people who are listening who necessarily might not be in theatre or film and things like that, but there might be something that they can take home as well. So is there anything that they, from your own work, that they could try and put into their own lives and their own sexual situations? That's a sexy way of putting sex, isn't it? Sexual situations.
And I am asked this, and I have to make it absolutely clear, and there's been some articles are out going, you're the sex guru, and I'm going, I'm not a sex guru. In fact, that's the last thing that I am, you know, sort of, I'm not a sex expert. You know, each and every one of those scenes, the important thing is that I research it. The beautiful scenes, the beautiful storytelling, say for example on Gentleman Jack, you know, we've got Anne Lister's amazing diaries that were sort of being uncovered, and the amazing, you know, reading her language, and you know, then, you know, I was did my research in order to be able to make sure that those queer lesbian storytellings were really honoured that community. So I'm not a sex expert, but I think, you know, as I was saying, just those tenants and feeling that the response of you, Kate, you know, just open communication and consent, agreement and consent, you know, so, and it can be awkward, can't it, with our real life partners, having those conversations about what is okay for you? How are you today? What would you like? So I suppose that's an aspect that I feel can be taken, is just through that open communication and through perhaps a boundary being set, then actually that invites freedom and joy and more of a release and, you know, the idea of intimacy once those boundaries are put in place. So I think you can take that.
That's such good advice. And I mean, I think the amount of time I spend saying to people about relationship issues in general is don't wing it. Plan. And because everybody's so caught up with the idea that sex should be spontaneous and relationships should just happen. And, you know, they're not okay unless they do. And it's just not true. You you need to plan. And you need to be clear.
And also what's so lovely with that is that and that was part of the shift in the industry with the planning was, you know, saying, oh, we can't make time for rehearsal. That's going to waste time. And of course, you're going, hold on a minute. In your schedule, you've got a stunt rehearsal, You know, you know that you cannot put a stunt in front of a camera until it's rehearsed clearly. And it's just flipping your mindset. So it's the same. And just as you're saying that, Kate, of course, you know, it is that thing, that isn't it, that you think in your real life, it's got to be spontaneous. It's got to happen in the moment. But of course, planning means that you're giving your partner time and space. You're honouring them with actually saying, I'm going to make time for you. I'm going to push back the boundaries of all the pressures of cooking dinner, my work, the kids calling on you and saying, you are special to me and you matter. Therefore, I'm going to actually give you a special pocket of my time and plan for that and allow for that. And then within that, allow whatever might happen within that. And of course, that is such a gift, isn't it? The gift of ourselves, the gift of time.
So true.
And like you say, setting those clear boundaries, that often inspires the creativity in both art and in a sexual context. God, I am really putting sex, making it sound really sexual, but in the sexual context as well. Yeah, that's what inspires the creativity. That's what inspires the fun. And sometimes that's why I think people are afraid of a blank page, because there's nothing, there's creativity can't spark from nothing. You need to set yourself boundaries and almost rules, so then you can play around them and relax. Exactly.
And be creative.
That's right. It's a thing of actually when you bring the walls in and make them narrower, actually then you can delve so deeply within them.
Oh, I wish I could take you with me to work.
Maybe you are a sex guru after all. Who knew? Ita, at the end of the podcast, we like to ask our guests, how was it for you and was it good for you too? is there anything you're taking away?
First of all, I'm taking away, I have to just go, what a beautiful relationship you two have as mother and son.
Oh, that's very kind.
Yeah, so first of all, I have to reflect that to you. This is so joyous to have this three-way conversation and to celebrate that. Mm. And yeah, it was good for me. Thank you. It was so lovely just to have a chat. And and thank you for your interest in the work. It's been a joy to be able to lift the lid off it and have this conversation.
Yo, it's been fascinating, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, and we just have to thank you because since the first lockdown where mum and I sat on her bed and watched normal people, rather uncomfortably at points, and you are at fault for that.
thank you. I'll take that.
Well, we've been fans ever since, so it's such an honour to have you on. Thank you so much.
It really is.
It's my pleasure. I just have to say then, watch out for It's a Sin if you want the next instalment of amazing storytelling, amazing intimate content. It's a Sin. I'm so, again, from the first reading of that script, so proud to be part of it. And I was a musical theatre dancer in the 80s, so it reflects a lot of my life. So look out for that.
Wow.
Excellent. Hopefully see you again very soon.
Thank you so much. It's been a great time talking to you.
It's the mailbag. Send Kate your queries. Twopodcasts@hatch.com. It's the mailbag. Send Kate your queries. Podcasts@hatchick.com.
Hello there. I have a query for Kate. I would like to know when the real sex education mailbag starts.
The real sex education mailbag starts right now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much again to Ito O'Brien for a great interview. Absolutely fascinating. And some of you keen-eared out there will hear the moment where I was explaining something and she said, yes, yeah, well done. That filled me with so much joy. I wanted everyone to hear that and know that.
Is that the bit we cut?
No, absolutely not. No. No. What do you mean, is that the bit we cut? That's the bit I'm going to put that top. Right, now is the time of the show where I put some of the questions that you sent into us via podcasts@hatchet.com or on the Twitter using the hashtag RealSexEDU to Kate, an accredited sex and relationships therapist. Mum, our first question comes from Layla, who says, I have noticed sex has been a bit uncomfortable recently, and when I had a feel around inside, I noticed a huge lump protruding into my vagina, which actually seems to get in the way of me going to the loo. I looked again the other day and it didn't seem to be there. And also, going to the toilet eased for a while, but now it's getting worse again. I'm terrified this is cancer and I've been avoiding sex in case it makes it worse. Help.
Oh my goodness, that sounds really worrying. Poor you. Sounds awful. And you do need to see your GP. I think it's probably a bit of a prolapse. So particularly the anterior wall of the vagina, the upper wall, tends to sometimes sag into the vagina when the bladder's full, when there's a bit of a bladder prolapse. And when the bladder's very full, it pushes downwards. And it can be very difficult to open your bowels, actually, when that happens, because it's pressing and stops that from happening. It disappears when during sex quite often, this sort of thing, because the vagina balloons and everything moves backwards. Sometimes people have a sort of lump from the upper wall of the vagina, and sometimes people actually see the womb at the mouth of the vagina because it's sort of dropped down. So things do tend to go south a bit when you've had lots of babies, actually. Mm. It's not at all uncommon, or when you've been pushing for a long time when you've had a baby. So prolapses are really, really, really common. So it isn't awful. It can be treated and it'll be fine, but it won't go away just by hoping it will. Mm. It's very, very unlikely that this is cancer. This sounds like a prolapse, but you do see your GP, do get it looked at, and do get some help quickly.
Okay. Right. We have another one here from Anonymous who asks, my boyfriend and I have been together for a couple of months, and it came up the other day that he hadn't had an STI test in quite some time. I've asked him to get one and he seems really, really reluctant to. It's become a bit of an issue and it feels like I don't really want to have sex with him anymore.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because I wonder why they were having sex with this person if they weren't comfortable about their STI status. I guess if you've just met somebody, you might be thinking, well, I don't want to cross-question them and demand a certificate. But on the other hand, you really want to feel more comfortable than this person clearly does. Mm. So perhaps for the future, it would be something to talk about first. I hope they've been using condoms if they're having penetrative sex. But they might not be. They might be waiting a bit until the STI test. But I wonder what the problem is, because STI tests are available.
You can do some of them from home.
Some of them you can do from home.
Yeah.
It's really straightforward. So I agree with them that this shouldn't really be a problem. And I if they've never done it before, they might be really nervous about it. So there is that. And then maybe they'd appreciate someone to go along, or they may be frightened of discovering something, some bad news, because some people are.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about here, is that, you know, maybe in the back of their mind somewhere, they think, oh, you know, maybe I have got an STD and that's why I don't want to take one, because then it will be confirmed to me. But that just seems insane.
But I wasn't thinking along the lines that this is somebody who's trying to hide something. I was thinking more that they just are very, very, very anxious about health stuff and try not to think about it. And, you know, some people are like that. They just try to put it out of their heads so that they don't have to think about it. And then they get really upset if they're reminded. It could well be someone who's just really, really anxious. So this needs a proper conversation rather than being cross, you know, trying to find out why. But if this person is absolutely insisting they're not going to get tested, and it's their human right not to have to or not to be asked, or if they find it insulting, then maybe this is something you're never going to agree, because they do absolutely have the right not to be tested. But on the other hand, you also have the right to ask them to. So,
and you should definitely get tested and maybe think about removing yourself from the situation and potentially not having sex with them again. I mean, just because now at that point, they're putting themselves and therefore you at risk as well.
I do wonder, though, whether maybe it's somebody who hasn't had sex before.
Maybe.
And then maybe thinks, well, it's not necessary because this is new to me.
But say that. Like, wouldn't you say that? Oh, maybe they didn't want to say that because maybe they're embarrassed.
Yeah, I mean, if you're with some cool person who's saying, have you had an STI test lately? You know, it's not.
And you're there thinking, oh, you're the first person I've had sex with.
Yeah.
But I don't want to let you know that, because we've just been dating. It's been a couple of months. You seem really cool. You haven't noticed yet that I'm a virgin before this. And, you know, I want to keep things going. And now you've asked me this STI question. I've never done it before. I'm too scared. It will show that I'm a virgin. I don't want to do it. I mean, that's a possibility.
It is a possibility. Yeah.
I mean, maybe in this serious conversation, you could bring that up. But then they'll go, you think I'm a virgin? I'm pulling up my best moves here. It's a tough one.
It is really difficult. But I always think with everything, you should have an open mind and consider more than one explanation, because you might convince yourself that they're being duplicitous when actually they're just scared.
Yeah.
So a proper conversation. And then if you're not satisfied, cut and run.
I feel like I went down the route of they're hiding something very quickly. And I think, you know, that maybe says something about me. But there we go.
Well, they might be, you know.
Well, don't say that. Now you scared them again. And you scared me
again. Sorry.
All right. Well, that is all we have time for. But please do keep sending in your emails and tweets and questions to us. We really, really appreciate them. But we absolutely love them. Right. Thanks again to Ito O'Brien for speaking to us. Thank you, Kate Campbell, for your sex therapy expertise. Thanks, Mum.
Thanks, Diggs.
And thank you for listening. See you next week for some more real sex education. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Andy Goddard. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast. This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.